Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bigger Pockets Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Meyer, and my friend Henry Washington is here with me today. Henry, good to see you.
You as well, my friend. Glad to be here.
Do you invest in multifamily?
I guess the technical answer to that is yes. I invest in small multifamily. So my largest multifamily unit, I have two or three different 8-unit buildings, but I don't have a building above 8 units.
But that's technically multifamily. And just for everyone listening, the traditional cutoff is at 4 units. And that might sound really arbitrary, but it's actually not. It comes from lending. Anything that is 4 units or fewer is considered residential property. And so you can get like a traditional mortgage on those types of properties. Anything 5 or above, usually you're going to have to get a commercial loan. So that's why we make that designation. And today we're actually going to be talking about the big ones. We're going to be talking about 5+ properties and what's going on with rent there, because the commercial market with these bigger properties and the residential market actually perform really differently. Oftentimes, one market's doing well, the other one's not. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now. The residential market is doing its thing. It's chugging along. But multifamily, there are a lot more question marks right now about what's happening and what's going to happen in the near future. So we are going to bring on an expert to talk about this.
Today's episode, we're going to be talking to Kim Bettencourt, who is the Vice President of Multifamily Economics and Strategic Research at Fannie Mae. And she's going to go over the ins and outs of this asset class and talk to us about what she sees in terms of rent growth, in terms of vacancy, and many other factors that could play into how multifamily is going to do over the next several years.
All right. Well said. With that, let's bring on Kim Bettencourt, Vice President of Multifamily Economics and Strategic Research. That is a cool title at Fannie Mae. Kim, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. We're going to jump right into sort of the macro level situation going on in multifamily. Where are we with rents as we're recording this at the end of February 2024?
So it's a little too early yet to get rent data for for January and clearly for February. But where we were at the end of the year, at the end of 2023, was that on a national level, we had seen negative rent growth. So rents were estimating, declined by maybe 66 basis points, ending the year at just under 1%, year over year rent growth. And so what does that mean? Well, normally rent growth tends to be between 2 and 3% on an annual basis. As you can guess, it usually tends to track inflation, sometimes slightly above, maybe, slightly below, but somewhere in that range. So as you can tell, last year, even though inflation was up, we definitely saw that decline in rents. Again, that's at a national level. It really does depend where you are. I've been saying that, this is really a tale of two markets, right? So in some places, there was rent growth, and in others, there was negative rent growth. For example, it's estimated that rent growth was maybe negative by over 3% in Austin, just in fourth quarter of last year alone, but was positive in other places like St. Louis and Kansas City and some other places. So it really does depend where you are. Primarily, it is in markets that seem to have either undersupply, so not enough supply, rent is higher, oversupplied, a lot of new units coming online, rent growth has been lower.
Do you feel like the slight rent growth decline is due to such a big steep rise in rents after the pandemic, like we're just coming down off that high?
It's partly that. It's also partly this new supply I'm talking about. So some of the data that we've seen, it shows that, for example, rent growth on new leases has actually been declining. Instead, where the rent bumps have been coming is for people that are renewing their rents. And I believe what that's due to is that people came in 2021, 2022. They remember getting really socked with rent growth, rent increases when they changed apartments. And so what they probably thought is, hey, you know what? I'm going to try to stay where I am. Even if that's going to cost me maybe 2 or 3 or 4% of an increase, that's probably better than what I remember paying. Not realizing that actually in a lot of places, especially in a market with a lot of supply, they probably could have gotten, not paid as high of a rent increase. But it's because of that new supply. Again, it depends on what market you're in. Some markets have seen a lot of supply. We actually estimated that more than 560,000 new units were added last year, which, you know, is much higher than we've seen last year. And or the year before, 2022, was about 450,000 new units. And before that, it was under 400,000. So it's been definitely increasing.
Kim, I'd love to dig into that a little bit. For those of our audience who might not be as familiar with the sort of construction backdrop that's going on in the multifamily space, can you just give us a little historical context?
Yeah, sure. And it's actually, you know, it's important to remember the timeline is very different for multifamily new construction versus like single family. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of times, you know, single family, those properties will go from a hole in the ground to a house that's built, you know, in the matter of a few months, all right? But in multifamily, it tends to be a much longer timeline. Now, again, depending what kind of property, where you're located, but on average, it's anywhere from 18 months to 3 years. And it's a little closer to the 3 years usually. So that's a much longer timeline. So a lot of these units that are coming online, they were started a long time ago. So a lot of multifamily builders, they're sort of having to, you know, sort of figure out in the market where they are, when they're going to be coming online, you know, what are the demand drivers. So that leads to part of the issue in multifamily, where you'll see that certain markets may get out over their skis in terms of supply. But then what happens is the market self-corrects, and you'll see that just in a few years, a year or two, then that market might actually be undersupplied again. So it can be more volatile than you'll see on the single family side, because they can sort of turn that on and off a lot more quickly than in the multifamily space.
And so given that timeline, which is super important context for everyone to understand, it sounds like we're still working our way through this glut of construction that could have started 12, 24 months ago.
Right. So not only are we working through it, but actually there's still not enough housing, believe it or not, being built to meet the expected demand. Part of the issue is that there's like more than a million units of multifamily rental underway. And that sounds like a lot. But in reality, we still have a housing shortage. The problem is that there's a lot of new supply in about maybe 20 metros. And within those metros, it's concentrated in a handful of submarkets. So that's part of the issue, is that it's not evenly distributed. You know, it's sort of, you know, bunched in these markets where there's been migration and job growth and, you know, demographics are very important for multifamily. That's because the person most likely to rent an apartment is between the ages of 20 and 35. You know, well, lots of people rent apartments, but that's the majority of folks that rent apartments. And so when builders are looking at, you know, where they're going to build, they're looking in metros that have a much younger population. So, for example, Austin has a very large younger population, not only because of the university, but they've got tech jobs, you know, it attracts a younger demographic. So there's been a lot of building there, especially because they've also seen a lot of migration in terms of job growth, especially in the tech sector. And so that was a market that wasn't terribly big. And so, but over the past few years, saw a lot of people coming in. So builders have been really building. So there's definitely an oversupply. And I don't want to make this understand. I just want everybody to understand that. Yeah, there's still a lack of affordable housing in a lot of places. When I talk about oversupply, I'm just talking about, you know, when you count up all the units, it's mostly in this higher end, the more expensive units. But that's what's getting built. And of course, you know, I sometimes make the joke, it's a shame we can't build the 20-year-old building because that is what tends to be more affordable in a lot of places. But when we're building new, it does tend to be more expensive. And the builders are charging, you know, the owners are charging the higher rents. So you're absolutely right, though, about, you know, it depends on the market, depends where you are, because when we talk about, you know, certain markets, you know, we never look at states because a state is big. It's very different. We're looking at these different metro areas, and they're not necessarily cities either. They are sort of the metro area because the metro will draw people from a wider radius for jobs and, you know, lifestyle, things like that.
Kim, thank you for explaining that, because that's something that sometimes confuses me, and maybe it confuses some other people, is that we hear that there's this national housing shortage. At the same time, we hear there's an oversupply, and there's that sounds contradictory. But when you explain that, so much of this is just mismatch, both in terms of class, where it's like, you know, they might be really high-end properties where what we need is class B or class C properties, and in terms of geography where, you know, we might need housing in the Midwest, but it's getting built in the Southeast. So that is super helpful.
Right. And even in the metro that I'm talking about, it'll be in a handful of submarkets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that can also be an issue, right? Like maybe we need it a few miles away, but it's all being built sort of in the same neighborhood, right? The same submarket. So that's another issue as well.
All right. We're getting into the dynamics of supply and affordability, but there's more to come. After the break, we'll talk about the demographics of who is renting and why, and what Kim anticipates we'll see in terms of rent growth over the next few years. Stay with us.
What if you could buy new construction homes up to $20,000 below market value? That's right, $20,000 in instant equity. What if you could use that same $20,000 to cover your down payment or score a lower mortgage rate? Talk about being spoiled for choices. Right now, Rent-A Retirement is offering investors their choice of incentives when they invest in a new turnkey property. Your options? Up to $20,000 below retail pricing on new construction homes, aka instant equity. Or a 5% down payment credit. That means less cash out of your pocket. Tired of high rates? Use that $20,000 to lower your interest rate to as low as 3.99% and score free property management for a year. All right, well, now they're just getting crazy over there. Rent-A Retirement's final option? No money down investor loans. Take your choice of instant equity, low or no money down, or a rate as low as 3.99%. To learn more, visit rentoretirement.com. That's rent, T-O, retirement. .com or text REI to 33777 REI 33777 to take advantage of these limited time incentives. We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, RentReady now offers proof of income verification. RentReady's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all Bigger Pockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com using code BP2024. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready. Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is. We're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day, and I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So, go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Kim Bettencourt, Vice President of Multifamily Economics and Strategic Research at Fannie Mae. And Kim is taking us through the ins and outs of the multifamily space. So let's get back into it.
So what I wanted to ask was, most of the new construction is around this A class, and that's where a lot of the units are getting added. But there has to be some sort of trickle-down effect, right? Meaning that if we're throwing new A class out there, then and that gets oversaturated, then technically what they can ask for rent will be less. How does that impact B and C class and affordability there?
No, it's a really great question. And what that is called filtering. So as the new stuff comes online, then the older properties that were Class A, in theory, now become Class A minus, B plus, B, and the Class B becomes Class C. And you're absolutely right. The affordability does move in sort of in tandem with that. What has disrupted that in the past, when the interest rates especially were lower, was a lot of properties were getting purchased as value add. You might have heard about that. And so what would happen is people would buy those properties and they would fix them up and turn them from Class B to Class A or A minus and Class C to Class B plus, that type of thing. There was quite a lot of that going on. And so that sort of also eroded the amount of Class B and C already existing out there. So that's been sort of an issue that we're trying to sort of catch up with. But now let's just talk about our new supply. So our new supply comes online. We have been moving down a little bit, but because there isn't enough across the country, right, when I was talking about that housing shortage, it hasn't really been enough to move a lot of that supply into the Class B and C. On top of that, those rents have also been increasing. So not as high as the Class A, but they've still been increasing. And actually, the delta between Class A rents and Class B rents has been widening over the past few years. Sometimes we think back to the Great Recession, and what happened was Class A rents fell during the Great Recession, which was 2009 to 2010. We saw those rents drop. And so what happened was they dropped enough, and the differential between a Class A and Class B wasn't so great that some people were actually able to do what we call the great move up. So people who had been in Class B moved up to Class A because they could afford it now. Same with Class C to Class B. We're not having that now because, again, that delta between the rent levels of Class A and B have really widened out over the past several years due to inflation, higher building costs, you know, the increases in the time to bring properties to market, and demand from demographics has really pushed up that differential, especially between Class A and B. The other thing that we've been seeing is that a lot of folks that would normally be moving into that home ownership, first-time homeowners, that age has gotten older over the past few years. So now it's currently at around age 36. But we've got a lot of people that are still in that younger cohort, as well as Gen Zers, that they're in rental. Now, some of those older millennials would like to buy a home, but they're not necessarily able to buy a home for whatever reason. In many places, there's not enough supply, interest rates are higher, you know, there's and a lot of people that have mortgages, especially, you know, baby boomers, of which I'm one, you know, we got a really low interest rate when we could refinance a few years ago, right? So there's a big portion of folks out there, of homeowners out there, that have 4% or 3% or lower mortgage rates. They're not selling. So everybody's kind of like in this holding pattern, but the demographics keep adding people to the home, to, you know, forming households. So we've got, especially as we have positive job growth, those people tend to form a new household. So it's sort of, think about it as sort of bunching up. And what's happening is people are getting stuck in rental longer. And we tend to call some of those renters, renters by choice. In other words, they could technically afford to buy a home, but for whatever reason, they are not. And so instead, they're renting a little longer. And so that's also been putting a lot of pressure on supply. Because in the past, a lot of those folks would have maybe moved into home ownership or even renting single family homes. And instead, they're staying in multifamily a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Definitely with people who have the lower interest rates, they're not selling. And it's interesting to see the average age of someone who rents now going up because more people are now choosing to rent. And so I would assume that that correlates to vacancy, and that vacancy would typically now be a lot lower in these buildings. Is that what you're seeing across vacancy rates?
Well, vacancy rates have inched up because of this new supply. So as we add that extra supply, and it's taking a while to get people in there, it does push up the vacancy rate. But when you look at the vacancy rate for Class B and C, that's really tight. So you're exactly right. That has not been rising nearly as fast as it is for the Class A.
Okay, so Class A vacancy is going up because we just keep adding new supply. But the people in the good old faithful B and C, they're just locked in. And so you're seeing lower rates there. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, those rates are pretty tight. They're not moving much. And so that creates a lack of that affordable housing for a lot of folks because people just aren't moving out if it's a rent that they can afford.
Kim, as we talk about rent trends and what's going on right now, can we talk a little bit about what you're expecting for the future? Do you expect this softness in rent to continue as we work through the lag? And how long might this softness continue?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right? Everybody asks. Yeah, no, I mean, we are expecting that rent growth will be subdued again this coming year in 2024. Might improve slightly because we are expecting job growth to be a little bit better than what we had originally been expecting. So right now, we think job growth will be about 1% this year. And we, in the multifamily sector, we tie very much the performance of the sector to job growth. And that's because, again, a lot of jobs, you start a new job, especially if you're a young person, you start a job, you tend to form a household when you start that job. Now, it could be with roommates, it doesn't matter, but you form a household. Then, as the job growth continues, then what might happen is you get a better paying job, and then maybe you don't live with roommates, you get out on your own. So we're always taking a look at job growth because that forms that household, that first household. Usually a first household, people don't run out and buy a house when they get their first job, they tend to rent. So we do focus on that. So that's been where we expect to see this type of, you know, demand. And so therefore we're expecting that rent growth will be a little bit better in 2024 than we did see in 2023, despite the fact that we have a lot of this new supply still coming online. So that's the plan, but it's not great. We're still thinking 1%, maybe 1.5%, but it's probably going to be closer to 1% this year, very close to what we saw last year. Now, that said, come 2025, as we start to see that this new supply has been delivered, we're not adding that much more new supply, then we'll start to see that rent growth start to pick up. So we do expect it to be a little higher in 2025. And then by 2026, it could really start to, you know, see some momentum because we're not putting online all this new supply. And we still have the demographics that I've been talking about, the Gen Zers, they're still going to be in that rent, that sweet spot of renting, that age for rental. And now all of a sudden, we don't have a lot of new supply coming online. So as that supply that came online last year and this year gets absorbed by 2026 in a lot of places, we could start to really see rents get pushed because there's not enough supply.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the supply and demand and rent growth, taking a slight dip. But just because rent growth has come down a little bit, that doesn't necessarily mean that people can afford the rents of the places that they are. Where are you seeing affordability in terms of these rent declines?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point, you know, and like I was talking about earlier about the Class B and C, even though their rent growth has declined, their incomes have not necessarily grown, especially from the rent growth that we saw in 2021. So we saw that rent growth really escalated in 2021, and it was still elevated in 2022. And even though wages have increased, we're still playing catch up, right? You know, inflation was up and rents were up 10% or higher in a lot of places. I don't know anybody who got a 10% increase in wages. So people are still playing catch up. And then remember that we've also had inflation. So it's not like they're also, you know, they're not just paying more rent, they're paying more for food and other costs. So there is still this pressure, especially on that Class B and C component, because the wage growth, while positive, is not enough to offset the increases we've seen over the past few years.
But in theory, right, if rent growth stays where it is, then affordability should come back a little bit given the pace of wage growth right now, right?
It should. But again, we're expecting that because of the supply that we're probably only going to have another year of this subdued rent growth. And I'm not sure that the wage increases are still going to be enough to offset that increase that we had in 21 and 22. But again, it does depend where you are.
Yeah, all this with the caveat that this is regionally variant. Yeah, but I do think that's really important for investors to note that they're just expecting rent growth to slow down for a year, because I think everyone's wondering where valuations in multifamily might go, because cap rates are starting to go up. But the one thing that could offset cap rates going up is if rents and NOI start to increase over the next couple of years. So I think there's maybe a bunch of multifamily investors here hoping that you're correct there, Kim.
No, I totally understand that. And I would say most of the data we get from our vendors and lots of other multifamily economists are seeing the same trends. So we're actually a little more conservative. I know that some are expecting rent growth to really sort of pop later this year and next year. We're taking a more conservative view. And it's because of that tying of demographics, that job growth, and then that household formation. I always think of that as the three legs of the multifamily stool in terms of demand.
Got it. And before we get out of here, Kim, is there anything else in your research or your team's work about multifamily, specifically from the investor perspective, that you think our audience should know?
Yeah, no, if you put on your investor hat, as you were talking about earlier about cap rates and valuations, I would say, trading has been very thin when you look at the data. So, price discovery is still sort of, we don't really have price discovery for multifamily just yet. I do think that if we start to see interest rates come down, that might spur some of the folks on the sidelines to say, okay, at this interest rate, at this cap rate, I can make that work. But one of the big reasons that I'm not concerned too much about the multifamily sector overall is because of the power of demographics. We have these people, we have the age group that rents apartments. And so this is just, a timing in terms of new supply and, where it's located. But overall, you cannot deny the power of demographics. And as long as we continue to have positive job growth and that leads to those household formations, we're going to start to need more multifamily supply over the longer term. And that is actually my bigger concern, that we are not going to have that necessary supply. And it's going to be here sooner than we think.
Well, thank you, Kim. We appreciate that long-term perspective. It's super helpful for those of us who try to invest and make our financial decisions on a longer time frame. For everyone who wants to learn more about Kim's amazing research, you should definitely check this out if you're in multifamily. We will put a link to it in the show notes and the show description below. Kim, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Sure. No, it was great. Thank you so much.
And if you're listening to this conversation and wondering, what does this mean for me? How should this impact the deals I'm going after? Stick around. Dave and I are about to break that down right after the break.
You're ready to open a business bank account for your new property. You know what that means? Coordinating a time between you, your co-founders, and your bank consultant, waiting at the branch, or waiting for hours on the support line. Who has time for that? With Relay, you can open a business bank account for your property 100% online from anywhere. Create up to 20 accounts to organize money by property or by categories like expenses, taxes, or investments. Effortlessly collaborate with role-specific access. That means giving your cleaner a debit card for cleaning supplies or your accountant read-only access to your transactions. Own multiple businesses? Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access them all from one centralized login. Okay, I'm going off script here. That is cool. It's annoying that I have to log into 10 business accounts with my current bank. So go sign up for RelayFi, because that's a feature that I like. No monthly fees or minimums, and it takes just 10 minutes to sign up. Head on over to RelayFi.com/BiggerPockets for stress-free banking. You can join me because I'm heading on over there right now. I'm heading on over to RelayFi.com /biggerpockets. Relay is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Thread Bank, member FDIC. The Relay Visa debit card is issued by Thread Bank pursuant to a license from Visa USA Inc. and may be used everywhere Visa debit cards are accepted. You've heard us talk about it before. High interest rates are crushing real estate investors, leaving even some of the best investors in need of funding now. But with today's liquidity crisis, who can fill the demand? With Fundrise, America's largest direct-to-investor alternative asset manager, you have the opportunity to. Fundrise's new opportunistic private credit strategy was designed specifically for this new market environment. Fundrise supplies high-demand bridge financing on high-quality assets with creditworthy borrowers. Top real estate investors get the funding they need while you walk away getting paid a healthy interest rate. To date, Fundrise has completed more than $500 million worth of private credit deals with an average net interest of 10.8%, and they've already amassed a pipeline worth more than $300 million. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can take advantage of this unique window of opportunity while it lasts with Fundrise's new private credit strategy. Ready to start? Go to fundrise.com/pockets to learn more. That's FUNDRISE.com/pockets. This is a paid endorsement for Fundrise. Past performance is not indicative of future results. All investments can lead to loss. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers a targeted 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split with 70% of net profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, are first in line to get paid. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of a physical asset mitigate downside risk. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by directing your funds from Wall Street to Main Street and supporting local economies. The investment is reserved for accredited investors. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then, when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the Fountain of Youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com.
Welcome back, investors. We just wrapped up a heck of a conversation with multifamily expert Kim Bettencourt, and we are about to break down what this means for you.
Another big thanks for Kim for joining us today. Before we get out of here, I just wanted to sort of help contextualize and make sense of what we're talking about here. Hopefully everyone listening understands that rent growth and vacancies are super important to anyone who's buying multifamily and holding on to real estate over the long term, because that impacts your cash flow and your operations. But what we were talking about at the end was really about multifamily valuations and growth. If you're familiar with multifamily at all, you know that one of the more popular ways to evaluate the value of a multifamily property is using something called cap rate. So the way you do that is you take the net operating income, which is basically all of your income minus your operating expenses, and you divide that by the cap rate, and that gives you your valuation. And the reason this is so important is because the way that NOI grows, one of the two important factors of how you grow the value of multifamily is from rent growth. And so that is one of the reasons why multifamily was growing so quickly over the last couple of years, is because rent growth was exploding and that was pushing up the value of multifamily. Now that it's slowing down, we're seeing NOIs flatline. And at the same time, we're seeing cap rate goes up, which, not to get into it, that pushes down the valuation of multifamily, which is why a lot of people are talking about multifamily crash and how risky multifamily is right now. And so if you sort of take zoom out a little bit about what Kim just said, she was basically saying she expects this to continue, that NOIs are probably not going to grow much over the next year, but she thinks after that they might start growing again, which is probably good news for multifamily investors, many of which are trying to weather a difficult storm right now with high interest rates, rising cap rates, stagnating rents. So just wanted to make sure everyone sort of understands what this means for prices in the multifamily market.
It's also great information for prospective multifamily buyers who are looking to jump into the market and potentially buy some of these B and C class properties that are going to become available, especially with the new A class coming on board. But if you're going to try to get a bank to underwrite your deal, you're going to have to forecast, hopefully long term, and be conservative with that. So understanding or having an idea of where you think rent growth is going to go, or I should say a more realistic idea of where you think rent growth is going to go, will help you have more conservative underwriting and hopefully keep you out of trouble if you get into a property and it's not producing the results that you need in a short-term fashion.
Very well said. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate it. Hopefully you learned something from this episode. We're going to be trying to bring on more and more of these experts to help you understand some of the more actionable recent trends going on in the real estate market. So hopefully this information from Kim was helpful. Henry Washington, as always, it's always fun doing shows with you. Thank you for being here. And thank you all again for listening. We'll see you for another episode of the Bigger Pockets podcast very soon.
The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.